We're going to continue on in this series we started, I don't know how long ago, but we're making progress. As we go to the this text, you'll find it on page 1068 if you're using that Pew Bible. But we're going to look at what I'm calling a reward-looking faith of Moses. There it is up on the screen, perfect. So Hebrews 11, 23 through 28. Now, because you're probably like me and sometimes forget what's come before, just a quick review, and I mean quick. We've talked about Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And all of them, you're gonna catch this. You're gonna get this by the end. They lived by faith. Oh, you're so good. This is excellent. So, by faith, all these men and women included have lived by faith. Now, the point of tonight, when I looked at this text, was this here. So Hebrews 11, 23 through 28 has four fearless acts. Four fearless acts. And it shows us these four fearless acts so that you will look to your reward. You look to a reward. And I'm so glad you came up. By the way, we have coloring sheets here. Jack, if you want to help get those out, and there's some coloring pencils as well. For those who want to color, or there's some activities on there as well. For the adults who have children in your heart, you can take that as well. So we're going to look at these four fearless acts, but I'm just going to give you a spoiler alert. We're not going to finish this tonight. I got to the point and I realized, oh, this is too much. So we're going to look at two of the four fearless acts, and we'll either pick them up next time or I will just launch you on. You'll be so well equipped. You'll dive into the last two and get all of the marrow out of it. So as I mentioned before, the main phrase is by faith. So we're jumping into the section. We may have forgotten why it's here, but this is a larger section that began way back in chapter 10, in fact, in verse 19. And in chapter 10, verse 19, it begins this exhortation, which is a biblical word for an encouragement or a challenge. It's a, please do this. There's urgency in it. And what are they being urgent about? It is to hold fast. Why? Because he holds fast to us. Stay true to Christ because he is always trustworthy. Persevere in your faith. Just keep going. And then it comes to the big conclusion at the end of chapter 10. Why should we do all this? So that we will receive the final reward. Final is crucial because we don't always get the full reward here and now. In fact, even the best life now is nothing compared to the reward that's coming. So we jump into chapter 11, and it has all these illustrations. We just saw them flash across the screen. Illustrations of what a faith looks like when it seeks and lives for that final reward. So these are people who are exercising faith. I don't know if many of you have done exercising in your life. It's not wise to do when it's hot like it's been, but when we exercise, we notice that our endurance builds. We can walk farther, or we can lift heavier things, or maybe we can look at ourselves in the mirror and think, ooh, I look a little bit more muscular. There's profit that comes in exercising. But in exercising faith, we don't always notice an external to that. But here's what happens. We persist a little bit longer in resisting that temptation. So it comes along and it says, hey, look at me. Come on, let's run off together like we used to. And you say, not today, temptation. I'm not going to go along with you. And the more times you express faith, the easier it is to resist that and to say no, till finally the temptation says, what am I doing here? I'm wasting my time. I'm not going to be able to go with this person. I'm going to go after that person. They're not exercising at all. So exercising faith, but specifically, it's talking in our text about people who are suffering. They're being persecuted. They're being, you talk about persecution, we experience a little bit of it here in our culture. But people were coming in to their homes while they weren't there and walking off with the things that were there. I mean, you can imagine you come home and all of a sudden your living room has been emptied of all the products in there, all your possessions, except for the photographs of your children. Those have been left behind. But the telly, the Wii, whatever is gone. Why? Because you're a Christian and Christians deserve that kind of a thing. And they come along and take your things. We saw this happen in modern times, not just a few months ago when the Taliban took over control of Afghanistan. Do you know what they said? If you don't convert to Christ, you won't be able to participate with the regular things of society. And people said, oh, that's a free reign. I can just go and take things from the Christians. And so Christians had to put locks on their doors. And otherwise people might come in Afghanistan and take them. That's suffering. That goes on in our world. But it's happening to these people in the time of Hebrews. But they discovered that it was far better to keep trusting God. So this is what we're coming to. As we come to this text tonight, we're going to be in verses 23 through 28. So let's look at that together. And you may remain seated as I read this. So this is talking about Moses in verse 23. By faith, Moses, after he was born, was hidden by his parents for 3 months because they saw that the child was beautiful and they did not fear the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and chose to suffer with the people of God rather than enjoy the fleeting pleasure of sin. For he considered reproach for the sake of Christ to be greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, since he was looking ahead to the reward. Verse 27. By faith, he left Egypt behind, not being afraid of the king's anger, for Moses persevered as one who sees him who is invisible. Verse 28, by faith, he instituted the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch the Israelites. So here are the four parts, the four demonstrations of this faith. We have that, first of all, by faith, Moses was hidden. Secondly, by faith, he refused and chose to suffer. Thirdly, by faith, he left Egypt behind. And fourthly, by faith, he instituted the Passover. Okay, so we're going to look at this first one. Interestingly enough, it's talking about Moses, but it's not Moses' faith. Did you catch that? By faith, after he was born, Moses was hidden by his parents. Why are we talking about his parents when it's supposed to be about Moses? Well, that's an interesting question. Moses obviously did not have faith as an infant, as a newborn. He didn't know to trust God. So why is it talking about his parents' faith? Well, this gives us a clue that Moses is part of a legacy, a people who trust God. And so he is going to grow up with that as his influence, except he doesn't stay very long in the family. Well, it says here that he was hidden and he was kept because they did not fear the king's edict. And we read this in Exodus, but I'll put it back up on the screen here. As it said in Exodus, the woman became pregnant. She gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. So far the texts line up, don't they? But when she could no longer hide him, she got a papyrus basket for him, coated it with asphalt and pitch. That's sticky business there. By the way, that's the same stuff that they used to build the Tower of Babel, that asphalt and pitch to make it impermeable to water. She did that to the basket, and she placed the child in it and set it along the reeds by the bank of the Nile. Mums, can you remember when your child was just small enough to fit in your arms? About 3 months old, they're getting a little heavier, but you could still carry them. And then, can you imagine? You, for craft time with your daughter and other son, you build a basket. You weave it together, and then your other daughter and your son cover it with sticky pitch. And they ask, what are we doing? And you say, we're going to make a boat to float in the Nile. Oh, that'll be fun. And inside you know you're going to place that three-month-old bundle of joy that unfortunately won't stop crying into the basket. And you go to the river, and brother and sister are there, and they say, what's going to happen to baby? Well, let's find out. And you put the basket into the water and you push it out. Can you imagine the questions from your son and your daughter? What are you doing? What's going to happen to him? And you're thinking the same thing. What am I doing? What's going to happen to him? This is what was going on in that moment. By faith, they did this. And you can imagine the amount of faith it would take to do that. I'm completely entrusting my child. Now, it's one thing to release your child off to the world of university. But they're kind of prepared for that. They can talk. They can hopefully make some purchases with a small bank account allowance that they have. But a 3-month-old has nothing. You're hoping there aren't piranhas in the Nile, right? But off the baby goes and everyone's watching. And then the children are like, how are we going to get him back? And mom's thinking, I don't think we are. I think that's it. So we're going to pause for a second. I'm going to ask a quiz question to kind of break the tension because I know you're feeling the tension. Here's a question. Who are Moses' parents and his siblings? Okay, does anybody know the names of Moses' brother and sister? Aaron is the brother or sister. Brother, because you know the name Aaron could also be a girl's name if it's spelled E-R-I-N. So just making sure we're on the same page. Okay. Aaron is the brother, the sister. I see in the back. Say it loud. Miriam. Miriam's, I think you said I heard that somewhat. So excellent job. We have Miriam and Aaron. Now, here's a harder question. Does anybody remember the names of Moses' mother and father? Jochebed. That's quite a name. Is anyone here by the chance ever called that as a term of endearment by mom or dad? Oh, dear little Jochebed. And was Jochebed the mother or the father? The mother. It's a mother's name. It doesn't sound feminine to us, but it was to them. Very feminine, very pretty. Okay, anybody know the name of the father? Okay, listen close. What is it? Amram. I mean, that sounds like a father. I'm ramming. You know, just, wow, he's strong and powerful. And little sweet Jochebed and powerful Amram. And by faith, both of them decide to send Moses into the water. Here's where we get it from. In Numbers 26:59, the name of Amram's wife was Jochebed, the daughter of Levi. They're Levites. They're part of that tribe who was born to Levi in Egypt. And she bore to Amram Aaron and Moses and Miriam, their sister. There you go. So keep that in mind for the next Bible quiz. Excellent job. Okay, so here's another question, not quite on the quiz level, but what gave Amram and Jochebed the courage to disobey Pharaoh's order? Remember, Pharaoh had said, all the boy children must be killed. They must be thrown into the Nile River. And they said, not a chance. So look at the text. Look back at verse 23 here, or maybe you want to go back to Exodus. Be thinking, what was it? Why did they have the courage to obey? May not be exactly what you think. Let's look at the text here, verse 23. By faith, Moses, after he was born, was hidden by his parents for 3 months. Remember, this is all by faith, because they saw that the child was beautiful. Are you catching what it might be that caused them to disobey? Okay, now, I don't know if this happened to you, but why is that? Because it wasn't a girl? Because it's a boy? It looked like a girl, perhaps? The beautiful could be a feminine-looking one, which is all great until you just pull up the blanket. And oh, which Pharaoh's daughter did. She knew it was a Hebrew because she looked at the blanket and realized this child's circumcised. Or this child's a Hebrew. She knew from looking at him. So, what was it about this child? What was it about this child that helped them to have faith and to disobey? Okay, say it loud. Beautiful. What she brought, that maybe the child looked pretty, could be viewed as a girl. Now, this may have happened to you. It happened to my wife and I. When our son was first born, we looked at him and said, this is the most beautiful child that's ever been born. And we talked about how so many newborns have that awkwardness about them, but not our son. He is incredible. We marveled at how handsome he was. And then we had a second son and thought, wow, he too is handsome right out of the get-go. Look out. And of course, every other parent's looking at the child that's your newborn thinking, oh, I don't think it's so beautiful as you think, you know. But the parents saw he's beautiful. We saw this again in the text. It said the child was beautiful. That the child they saw was beautiful. So what about beautiful helps them to disobey? I mean, that's a big thing to base your life on. I have a beautiful child, so I'm going to disobey Pharaoh and his order. I mean, is that logical? Not really. So let's look at this a little bit deeper. Okay, what does it mean that they saw the child was beautiful? We get a little bit of help in the book of Acts. Stephen is giving his brilliant speech, his sermon, before he dies. And in Acts chapter 7, verse 20, he says, at the time Moses was born, and he was beautiful in God's sight, and he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. So this is the key. His father, the child was beautiful. Now, this word beautiful has a few different meanings, and we're going to think together. I think as the first time I heard this phrase, I will credit Rowena with saying it. I watched her do the children's time on the video when we were all in lockdown. Remember that time? And she would say this expression, let's have a think. And I thought, that's a wonderful expression. So let's have a think together. What might be the meaning of this word? One possible meaning is, he was a match for Pharaoh. He was as beautiful as Pharaoh was majestic. Would that give them faith to send their child? No, to disobey. Some people think it means well-bred. He's a fine-looking boy. Look at those arms. He's got biceps and pecs already. That boy's going to win a weightlifting competition. He is a future rugby player, star. He's going to be a linebacker for the New York. No, we're not going to go to American football. That'll confuse you. He could be a great cricketer, right? So, or well-formed. Look at all those fingers and toes. They're exactly where they should be. And that cute little button nose. He has two nostrils and the ears and the lobes aren't too big. He's well-formed. He's proportional. Is that going to help you to disobey the edict of Pharaoh? I'm not so sure. And some people say it just means, as we talked about, physically attractive. That is a beautiful child. So beautiful that I'm going to disobey Pharaoh. And once Pharaoh sees a child, he too will say, I will not harm such a beautiful child. Some people think it means that beautiful, just not ordinary. He stands out from the rest. Like we had this view of our sons as standing out apart from all the other boys born in America at that same date. So are those good reasons to disobey the edict of Pharaoh? Okay, let's look a little bit closer here. The child was beautiful in God's sight is what we are told in Acts 7. So there's something about, it's not merely a physical thing. God viewed this child as beautiful. And he doesn't mean just merely physical. There's something else going on. So listen again to Hebrews. As we bring this back in, Hebrews 11, verse 1. Now faith is the reality of what is hoped for. The proof is what is not seen. Okay, so the parents did this act of disobedience by what? By faith. But faith acts on what is not seen. So it can't be the physical beauty of the child, right? Now, it says that they saw that the child was beautiful, but what were they seeing? Well, we have some help from the Hebrew, going back to that Exodus passage, and it's related to a word that means good. And again, it kind of means possibly good looking, or good in what sense? It points toward uncommonly striking. So maybe we're getting at an idea here that there's something about his physicalness, but again, it's not by sight, right? It's in God's sight. What people come to on this are a couple reasons. One is that they could just tell there's something about this child. It's that mother's instinct. I just know my child has a gift. I know there's something different about my child. There was a visible sign of God's elective favor on this child. Something about the eyes of faith saw the child. I think the better view of this is what we get from Acts 7, simply that they saw him with God's eyes, and they knew this was a child set apart. They just had this sense God was saying, save this child. So they did that. By faith, they rebelled against the superpower of Egypt. So back to our text. By faith, Moses, after he was born, was hidden by his parents. For 3 months they did this. I mean, can you imagine? For 3 months, the tension in the home. Shh. Hurry, rock him, don't let him cry. Pick him up, hold him, put the bottle in, do whatever you can, keep him quiet. Miriam, sing that song again. Or Aaron, please do something, can you hold him for a bit? We got to keep him quiet. I mean, if the neighbors heard the wah, wah, I mean, it's over. They're coming in, they're grabbing the child, he's going into the river. The tension of that 3 months and how hard that would have been. And so we get to this point here in Exodus 2, verse 3, that but when they can no longer hide him, we don't know exactly why, but for whatever reason, they just couldn't do it any longer. They made the basket, and by faith, this is part of that act, by faith, he was hidden. So by faith, after he was born, Moses was hidden. We're seeing the parents' faith, which puts a shadow over Moses' life. This child came into a faith community, faith-believing family, a family who did things by faith, even to the point of putting Aaron and Miriam at risk for that beautiful child. So we're going to look at the second one, and this is as far as we're going to get tonight. By faith, Moses, He grows up by faith. He refused and chose to suffer. Verses 24 through 26. So here's the text. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter and chose to suffer with the people of God rather than enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. For he considered reproach for the sake of Christ to be greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, since he was looking ahead to the reward. So here's the part. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And by faith, he chose to suffer with the people of God. By faith. By faith, Moses did this. So we'll look at these in two parts here. First of all, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Or Exodus 2, verse 10. When the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because, she said, I drew him out of the water. So the beautiful story, Miriam's right there. Pharaoh's daughter sees him, takes him out. Miriam happens to be there, just coincidentally. And then she's able to take Moses home, and he's nursed by his own mother. Now, Moses can't be taught things yet. He's too little. But somehow they care for him until he's weaned and he goes back into Pharaoh's house. He could have been either weaned, so it could be about 2. Maybe he's 5 to 6 years old. It's some designated time he goes back to Pharaoh's house and he grows up there. So he grew up, but he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Being the son of Pharaoh's daughter, what does that mean for your inheritance, for example? What do you get when Pharaoh dies? You get his chariot. What else might you get when Pharaoh dies if you're the heir? Oh, the throne. Whoa, wait for a second. He gets plucked out of a river, and he then becomes the one to receive the inheritance. He's Pharaoh's daughter's son. Now, Pharaoh's daughter can't take the throne, so it seems like Moses is next in line. This is an incredible thing for Moses. He grows up, and so he becomes an heir of Pharaoh. Many people think, because of Jewish writing and their legends, that Moses became a great Egyptian military hero. And if you've seen some of the modern movies that have been made about this event, he always seems to be really good at the sword. He can ride a chariot like no one's business. He can fight. He can defend. He's a strategic military genius. So that comes from Jewish legend. But also, he gained learning and knowledge. He got educated at the finest universities in the world. Now, what does the text actually tell us? Go back to Stephen in Acts 7. When he was put outside, that means he was left in the river. When he's put outside, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him, raised him as her own son. Verse 22, so Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in his speech and his actions. Oh, can you imagine? Powerful in his speech. When he spoke, everyone said, I don't know what you said, but I fully agree with that. When Moses said jump, everyone asked, how high? Moses said run, they asked, how far? Everyone was enamored by him. He had a golden tongue. He could reason. He could make arguments. He would be so amazing as a prime minister. He was trained in the best, and he did so well. He was above all the others in his land. And he was great in his speech and his actions. So as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, it says he enjoyed, or he chose to suffer with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He refused to identify with his Egyptian heritage. He left that. He gave everything up. To what? Identify with the Hebrews, the slaves. Secondly, by faith, he chose to suffer with the people of God rather than enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. There's two things here. You see, pleasures of sin, and then also the wealth, the treasures of Egypt. These are two things he rejected. By faith, he rejected them. So let's look at this very quickly here. Actually, I want to go stay here for a bit. First of all, you have pleasures and you have treasures. Pleasures and treasures. Limitless wealth he had access to. He never had to ask to borrow the chariot. He could drive whatever chariot he wanted. Fleeting pleasures. Think about the daffodils when they come up maybe late January into February. When do the daffodils disappear? They're around for a little while, but they go away. Then the tulips come up, but they fade quickly. That's what a fleeting pleasure is. Even if you get that for this life, it's nothing compared to eternity. So think about what he walked away from. All the luxury, the best food, the ease, the joy of Egypt, and he left that for what? To suffer with his brothers and sisters, the Hebrews. How in the world do you do that? By faith. You've got to look ahead. You've got to say, this is pretty amazing, but this is nothing compared to what's coming. So it was either stay with Egypt and turn away from the God of his fathers, or go to Israel and remain in good conscience with his faith. And here's the thing. He's not guaranteed success. God didn't appear to him and say, if you go this way, guess what? You'll become one of the most famous men in the Bible. You're going to go to the burning bush. You'll be the one to raise the staff like the Ten Commandments movie when Charlton Heston lifted up that staff and he put it down and the incredible special effects from the 1950s and the water rolls away and the people walk through on the dry ground. And then there's that cartoon version when they're walking through and the child looks up and there's a blue whale there and they can see the whale. They reach through and touch it. I mean, this is what you could be, Moses. You don't get that at all. It's Moses by faith. You could have Egypt or you could have suffering. And Moses said, it's better to suffer and be with my God than to continue on. I think he knew there's something about his place in life. Things were about to happen that if he didn't leave then, he wouldn't be able to leave at all. So he chose to suffer with the people of God. Think about the suffering, choosing to suffer. There's a great promise in the book of Peter, 1 Peter. He said this, talking about suffering, the Christian. Instead, rejoice as you share in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may also rejoice with great joy when his glory is revealed. If you are ridiculed for the name of Christ, you are blessed. Has anyone ever been insulted because of being a Christian? Has anyone called you names for that? Maybe foolish, religious. Never forget this moment when I was, for me, it was junior high, so it would be secondary here. I was in a physical education class, and the entire students of my grade were all together, my year, filled up the gymnasium. And the teacher was getting everyone's name to make sure everyone was there. And across the gymnasium, Travis was his name. He yells out to me, I heard you're a born-again Christian. And everyone in the whole auditorium, that gymnasium, is silent. They all look at me, and I can hear their heads turn. Whoosh, and everyone's looking at me. And I'm looking at Travis, and he's wanting to know, am I a born-again Christian? And I'm looking at everybody, and that moment seemed to just last an eternity. I'm about 13 years old. Everyone in the whole school is there looking at me. And I swallowed hard, and I said, yeah. And you know what Travis said? Nothing. He just put up his thumbs and went, all right. I was relieved, but it could have been very different, couldn't have? It could have been, you idiot. It could have been, how silly and stupid. It could have been so many changes, but there's so many names that people are called today because they're Christians. And I don't know if you've ever been called a name, but it says here, verse 14, if you are ridiculed for the name of Christ, listen to this, you are blessed. We talked about blessing today. You are blessed because, here it is, this is why you're blessed. The Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Dear child, if you choose suffering for the name of Christ, you're going to walk right into the presence of God. He will be with you. Okay, so our young ones today, think about this. God himself will be personally next to you, with you, right there, saying, well done. Good job. Excellent job. That is what we get. It just means a few people might make fun of you. So what? You get that. And then it goes on to verse 16. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in having that name, Christian. We don't need to change the name. It's a good name, Christian. It's confusion on what it means today, but don't shy away from it. This is what Moses chose. He didn't know all that he was choosing, but this is what he was getting. Here's how good old Spurgeon puts it. Oh, Moses, if you must needs join with Israel. There is no present reward for you. You have nothing to gain, but all to lose. You must do it out of pure principle, out of love to God, out of full persuasion of the truth. For the tribes have no honors or wealth to bestow. You will receive affliction, and that is all. You will be called a fool, and people will think that they have good reason for doing so. By faith, Moses did it anyway. Think about this. We cannot ever have the crown without the cross. A cross-centered life means we daily take up our cross and follow Jesus. Jesus said, any of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. Renouncing that means our affections toward it, our claims on it as something we deserve that is more precious than Christ, like Moses. He said, I'm not going to count the pleasures and treasures of Egypt to be better. So how did he do this? Well, verse 26, he was looking ahead to the reward. This is the key. Faith knows it's not just what you see here, but it's what's ahead. It's what's ahead. There's a reward. In fact, as it says back in verse 6 of chapter 11, now without faith, it's impossible to please God, since the one who draws near to him must believe that he exists. And this is part of our faith, that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. Do you think about God as being a rewarder? What are the rewards that you get when you do something for mom and dad? Maybe some pocket change, a few pounds here and there. Maybe you get ice cream, a little bit extra time on the Wii. I'm not sure how it is in your home. In my home, you just get a silent look of gratitude. Maybe a nod. And that means the world to my sons. Now, there's a little bit of motivation, sometimes financial incentive to do some things, but nothing like what God brings. Man, he brings so much. He rewards those. And what is it that we get? I love this description. Has anyone here gone to the British Museum? Okay, the treasures of the world have been gathered in the British Museum. If Moses had said, you know what, I think it's better to have the treasures and the pleasures. This is what scholar G.A.F. Knight said. Whatever Moses' social position, if he had remained on as a member of Egyptian society, all we would know of him now would be a name on a mummy in the British Museum. Not much. Instead, he is living and named among the family of God. So this is where we come to. I'm just going to skip to the end of these slides. Just real quick, the question, what did Moses believe? He believed that it was better to suffer. He believed that God would be a rewarder. How could he do this? The very last verse here, since he was looking ahead to the reward. Okay, so what it comes down to is this, by faith. Today, when you go home, it's still by faith. Tomorrow, it's going to be by faith. If the Lord tarries 200, 300, 1,000 years from now, it's going to be by faith. There is your catchphrase. So by faith, Moses was hidden, and by faith, he refused and chose to suffer. So we'll stop there tonight. And in case you want to do some study on your own, by faith, he left Egypt behind. By faith, he instituted the Passover. How did he do that by faith? Well, he did it because he trusted in the reward. I would love to go further, but we're going to stop there. The temptation must be rejected. By faith, I will resist the temptation to go on. So, four acts of fearless faith so that you will look to your reward. So parents, talk about the reward of your children. Remind them of what's coming. Talk about heaven. Husbands, remind your wives what's coming. Wives, remind your husbands what we have to look forward to. And children, remind your grandma and grandpa, Nana, about the reward, your parents. By faith, we're going to get through this. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we are amazed that it's so simple. It's by faith. And why is it so hard for us? It's just marvelous how Moses followed in the footsteps of his parents, Amram and Jochebed. He lived by faith, even though he was so long out of their home. We know that that is a faith that you gave to them. You are the giver of faith. And so, Lord, we ask you, as the Father asked Jesus, I believe, but help my unbelief. Give us faith to match the times that we live in. Grant us confidence that you'll give us the grace we need for whatever we're going to face tomorrow. And Lord, help us to pursue that reward. Keep it in front of us. Keep us seeking after that and believing you exist. You're present with us and you are a rewarder of those who look to you, who seek after you. I pray these things in the powerful and lovely name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, may God bless you this week and may you live by faith.